The Sundance Film Festival takes quite a beating in Peter Biskin's new book, Down and Dirty Pictures. In fact, a real whomping. The book traces the rise of American independent movies over the past 20 years, which has seen some independent filmmakers, including Steven Soderbergh, Quentin Tarantino, and Spike Lee, become among the most respected filmmakers in the world. Robert Redford, the founding father of Sundance, is shown in the book as intelligent and dedicated, but also remote and uncommunicative. But it's the Weinstein brothers at Miramax Film who portrayed the book as real bad guys. Anecdote after anecdote, they're shown as being greedy, vulgar, and insensitive, which is to say, not discernibly different from major studio chiefs. Peter Biskind writes about movies for Vanity Fair, joins us in our studios. Mr. Biskind, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Can I assume that the fact that you're sitting here and don't have any visible wounds means you haven't been to Sundance this year?
That's correct. I'm still alive, breathing, talking.
In the book, you suggest that, in a sense, Steven Soderbergh's film in 1989, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, is the film that changed the ground for independent films and what Sundance meant.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Sex, Lies, and Videotape in 1989 transformed Sundance, transformed independent film, and transformed Miramax, which distributed it. So it had a kind of triple effect. Up to that point, independent films had played in so-called art film ghettos, mm-hmm. You know, the one or two art theaters in any given town, if there were any at all. Miramax took that film and put it into the multiplexes and the malls, and it went on to gross $25 million, which was very, very good for an independent film at that time. And suddenly independent films were on the map.
Let's remind ourselves, in what ways was this film such a breakthrough?
Well, actually, I interviewed the actor Edward Norton about Sex, Lies in my book, and what he said that Sex, Lies was the graduate of his generation, mm-hmm. And he pointed to one of the lines of dialogue in the film where the character played by James Spader says, who can put his entirety of his worldly possessions in the trunk of his car, he said he'd constructed his life so that he only needs one key.
I like that, you know, I mean, just if I get an apartment, that's two keys, if I get a job, you know, I might have to open or close, it's more keys, you know, buy some stuff, I'm afraid it's going to get ripped off or something, and I get more keys, and I just like having the one key, it's clean,
right? I'm losing them, I always lose my keys, I hate that.
Get rid of the car.
You know, the film appealed to people because it was about, you know, this. First of all, it villainized yuppies who were easy targets in those days. It was just after the Reagan administration, and I think it valorized a kind of a sensitive male that had been absent from the screen for a long time before that. As far as Sundance goes, Sundance became a festival where a film like Sex, Lies could come out of nowhere, mm-hmm. Be discovered, director could go on to get a distributor, make some money off the film, and create a national reputation.
Mm-hmm. And why is it then that Robert Redford and Steven Soderbergh, who owe so much to each other, didn't wind up as fast friends?
Well, ironically, the film was so successful that Redford wanted to get into business with Soderbergh, and the movie that he ended up producing was called King of the Hill. Turned out that Redford didn't much like the movie, never got back to Soderbergh about his opinion, and tried to take his name off the movie. And at the same time, Soderbergh had been given a movie called Quiz Show, which Redford decided that he wanted to direct. And in fact, Redford being Redford and the big star, mm-hmm. He took the film away from Soderbergh and directed it without ever calling Soderbergh and saying, you know, sorry, Steven, I'm going to take this film away from you. He just did it.
Mm. I want to talk about money. Certainly do in this book. Good Will Hunting made $200 million for Miramax and the Weinstein brothers. How much money did Ben Affleck and Matt Damon get for it?
They got something like $600,000, under $1 million each one.
Now, did they just have a bad agent, or did they have bad instincts in trusting the Weinstein brothers?
Well, actually, neither. I mean, at the time that film was made, they were novices and desperate to get the film made.
I gather we have a clip of the film somewhere.
You want us to give you cash right now?
Now, I didn't say that. Allegedly, your situation for you would be concurrently improved if I had $200 in my back pocket right now.
Will you take a check?
Let me tell you something. You're suspect.
Afterwards, when the film did so well, they expected, I think, to be recompensed with bonuses which is a common Hollywood practice. And they did get some bonuses, but they resented...
They got $500,000.
They got $500,000 each. But they resented that, which was a chicken feed, though, compared to what the film actually made and what Miramax made off it. And today, there's a lot of tension between the three of them.
How would you fix Harvey Weinstein's influence in the film industry at this point?
I certainly would never, you know, not give Harvey the credit he deserves for. I mean, he did enrich a lot of filmmakers, and he created careers. You know, it was Miramax's support. A filmmaker like Kevin Smith probably never would have had the career that he's had without Miramax.
So what is there about him that seems to antagonize people of talent?
Well, you know, I think that Harvey is a filmmaker at heart, and I think he would be happier directing these films himself, and often feels that he can do a better job. So often he'll take a film that the filmmaker thinks is finished, and he'll either cut it down, or he'll reshoot parts of it, or he'll revoice it, which means re-recording dialogue or adding dialogue.
If you could explain with Bertolucci and Little Buddha, for example.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. Bertolucci is like a world-class filmmaker, you know, who's made films like Before the Revolution, Last Tango in Paris, 1900.
Last Emperor.
Bertolucci had a film called Little Buddha, which Miramax picked up without seeing it. It was a long film, as his films are often tend to be. Harvey wanted him to cut it down radically. Bertolucci agreed to make cuts. Harvey nevertheless took the film and recut it himself, and Bertolucci was incensed. I mean, he couldn't believe that somebody would treat a director of his stature so shabbily.
Maybe it's a torturous analogy, but this would be a little bit like taking 8 inches off of Van Gogh on the idea that that's what I need to make it fit on this wall over here.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's a very funny analogy. In any event, Bertolucci eventually did cut more than Harvey asked for. Harvey watched the movie, according to Bertolucci, and said, "This is terrific, you did a great job." But then he, according to Bertolucci, dumped the film, and Bertolucci, to this day, remains incensed. And he called Harvey the Saddam Hussein of independent film.
I admired a phrase in Time magazine's review of your book, where they said, "You're never going to eat lunch in Tribeca again." Mr. Weinstein tried to discourage you from writing this book?
Yes, he did. When I started the book, he called me into his office and told me that books like this don't make any money. You're wasting your time. It's fine if you want to be patted on the back at cocktail parties, but if you want to make any real money, give it up. Is there anything you really want to do? Well, most writers have projects rattling around.
I've got to tell you, that sounds pretty good to me.
I know, it sounded good to me. If he offered me a little more money, I would have gone for it.
It must be said at the end, whatever might be said about Harvey Weinstein, whatever might be said about Robert Redford, when the history of this time in film is written, won't they be remembered as having contributed something substantial with the breakthrough of independent films and left a mark on our culture? We might cavil and kvetch, but they've made a lot of lives richer with their work.
Oh, absolutely. I have no quarrel with that. I think that's absolutely true. I'm just, you know, a kvetcher by nature.
Mr. Biskind, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Peter Biskind, author of the book Down and Dirty Pictures, Miramax, Sundance, and the Rise of Independent Film.